Name me some 80s movies.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Ooh, I bet that one hasn't aged at all, but I haven't watched it recently. The first Ninja Turtles movie.
I still really like that one. I don't think it's aged that much. I mean, the animatronics look a little worse.
Willow.
Perfect. I loved Willow. And you know what? There's a Willow game I can talk about, so that's great.
Okay, let's go into all that. Right. Sean, I want to share my new phobia with you.
Uh-oh. It's not spiders, is it?
It's not.
Oh, thank God, although, my wife makes me kill them all the time.
Well, I'm very scared that I'm going to have problems watching old movies.
Like Citizen Kane? What do you mean?
Well, no. It's like movies from my childhood that have like special places in my heart. Sometimes I'm going back to those movies now and going, these really aren't very good.
Oh, Time Bandits.
Well, I don't know. I still like Time Bandits.
Howard the Duck.
I never liked Howard the Duck. So that my opinion of that one hasn't really changed much.
I see.
Willow.
Willow. Oh, I love Willow. Wait, I don't love Willow, do I?
Have you watched it recently?
Oh, it looks like a Daikini baby.
Hey, listen. If you still love Willow, don't watch it. Like, don't watch it right now but keep those memories, because I've been just ruining some of my memories since I got Hulu. You know, now I'm like, oh man, I love that movie. I haven't seen that movie in forever. And you watch and you're like, oh, but that's too bad.
Mad Mardigan and Val Kilmer when he was thin. Ah.
but the thing is, like, with those things, sometimes it's that the special effects haven't aged well at all. But sometimes it's just like, wow, the acting was really not as good as I had remembered it being.
Yeah, that can be a problem.
I don't know. Some things age really well, though. Like, I watched Back to the Future, the first one, really recently. And that's still a really, really good movie.
Oh, yeah, because all that Ion Land stuff was coming out. Like, they had that DVD box set that came out with all the stuff, especially, like, with all the Eric Stoltz footage that they talked about. And, you know, Caprica was on at the time still. And so it's like, I know who Eric Stoltz is. And so it got me to actually watch the first movie again. It is amazing how well that movie holds up.
Second movie, not as much.
Yeah, because we're right now T-minus 4 years from when the events of that movie are supposed to take place, and I don't have my flying car yet.
Well, it's not even that. It's just like because they had a more ambitious scope. You know, they tried to use like really early CGI and superimposing and stuff to represent a lot of the future effects. Sure. Although I still think that the hoverboard effect totally works.
Yeah. Well, it's mostly wires, right? So.
Did we talk about this in the previous podcast? I don't remember, but like people had told me at the time that hoverboard was a real thing.
Oh.
And I totally believed it.
I don't remember if we talked about that or not.
I don't think we talked. Maybe not. That's embarrassing to me now. But I'm like, I'm still waiting for mine because it said Mattel right on it. And I'm like, oh, movie tie-in. Right. Yes. Going to get me one of these. I think they actually did try to release something called the hoverboard that actually had wheels or something. I don't know.
Well, I did learn during that podcast that the Wild Gunman game that he plays in that doesn't actually exist because they never made an arcade version of the NES one. I've actually seen footage. Well, no. I mean, the arcade version came first. You know, it was based on actual like film clips and stuff. So the one with the 8-bit sprites and whatnot was made for the NES.
There was like the Play Choice machines and stuff, but it was the 8-bit game.
Okay, well,
but the one that they used in that didn't use 8-bit sprites.
It was new
drawn
stuff.
Drawn pictures. Yeah,
that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
It looked much better than the actual game would have.
But getting to that, like, I don't know, some things just, some things you need to take the nostalgia goggles off. I don't know if...
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Because, like, I was trying to show one of my friends one of my favorite movies when I was growing up, which was Ernest Goes to Camp.
I can imagine that one hasn't aged well at all. I loved those movies, though.
I don't know. It's a camp movie. Camp movies kind of age okay. You know what I mean?
A camp movie about a camp or a campy movie about campiness?
Both. Because, I mean, when a movie's not trying to take itself too seriously and it has a very simple premise, it ages a lot better.
Sure. That makes sense.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like, sci-fi movies don't age very well, you know, and things like that. But,
yeah.
But it was...
Tron.
The first Tron. I just watched that yesterday. Oh, my gosh. But anyway.
No, it's not bad. I mean, you know, it was, like, 83, so I can completely pass off any, like, poor graphics to that. But it had so many ideas that... Well, we talked about that during the podcast. I don't want to rehash old ground, but, you know... A lot of what we love about sci-fi and computer-based stuff today has to do with that movie.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. But anyway, I'm going back and I'm watching some of these discs. I'm seeing these movies that I assumed were groundbreaking, revolutionary, and amazing at the time. And I'm looking at them now and I'm like, they look kind of cheap, badly acted, and, you know, they just don't look all that great. But then I was thinking, well, can the same be said for video games? Do we use? I mean, you and I, we're retro gamers, and
right.
how much of what we really love about video games are we going, retro games really were better video games, or are we looking with the nostalgia goggles that, you know, that makes me still like Ernest Goes to Camp and The Wizard. Wizard is a great movie. Don't even start with me.
that's a topic for another time, obviously. But okay, you know, games are different though, and maybe it's because I've been playing these games more consistently than I've been watching these movies, and so my memories have sort of deviated from what they actually are. But you know, I tend to play a game. And there's like not a lot of illusions about what these games are and what they're meant to represent and what they're able to do. It's like you play a game. It's not meant to be like real life. And like a lot of these movies that we think about, it's like, oh, that's just like how it would actually have happened. Like I remember like telling my dad once, I didn't believe him when he said that like in Superman 4 when he like picks up the Statue of Liberty and he's flying it around. It's like, how did they do that effect? It was so lifelike. And like I went back years later and it was just like the worst matte shot and I'd ever seen in my life. You know, it's like I play Mario Brothers and 30 years later and it's just like how I remembered it. You know, it everything about it's the same. I feel the same way playing it, more importantly. I don't think to myself, oh, this is bad, I'm going to put this away.
Maybe you didn't leave a long enough gap because I don't think you ever went 20 years without playing
Mario, right? That's true.
But there's definitely games that have not aged well. Okay, anything early PlayStation or Saturn or something, any early 3D games,
N64 games, absolutely. Because I'm so used to having, you know, 30 plus frame rates per second now.
Hard to go back to five frames a second.
It's one frame rate. Yeah, yeah, you know, like Conker's Bad Fur Day. So I bought Conker Live and Reloaded for the Xbox. Partly because I was interested in some of like the multiplayer. And when I bought it, it actually wasn't on the compatibility list because I only had my 360 at the time. And then later it got added, and I didn't play a whole lot of it. And then of course the live service has since been shut down, so I can't do it online anymore. So you know, but I can still do it locally if I really wanted to. But like, you know, Conker's Bad Fur Day, and we talked about it very briefly the last episode for the N64 belated anniversary, but it's choppy as hell. Like it's really really bad. The sound is all compressed. That is due partially to the amount of time has passed, but also because the graphics have just improved so much since 2000. And it's like 2011? It's like 10, 11 years? It's crazy.
I find that games that had a very like cartoony, whimsical style have aged a lot better. Like Mario 64 still Zelda. I still think it looks good because it's, you know, bright, and but any game that like tried to be more realistic or serious just looks horrible now.
Yeah. Oh, so Phil mentioned this to me cuz you know, Ocarina of Time's on 3DS now. They redid everything, like, you know, new polygons, everything. You know,
yeah,
they didn't just like retexture the stuff. They made this game from the ground up again graphically. And the way he put it was, you know, this game looks the way you remember it. Is what he said.
And you know, that is a really good quote.
So I'm glad I remembered it was him who said it, and that I can attribute it to him publicly on this podcast.
Now, you talked in your Akiba Hall-like video about acquiring Samurai Showdown for the Super Nintendo.
Yes. I have not played it yet.
Or Samurai Spirits. Oh, you should play it, but just to see how different it was. But, like, when that game came out, when it was new at the video store and I rented it and I thought, wow, this is pretty impressive looking. And for a long time in my mind, I figured that the Super Nintendo version, the Neo Geo version, were fairly similar.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I'd played the video game in the arcade, and then I played the home version on my Super Nintendo, and in my mind, they were similar. But now, when I actually play the home version, I can't play the Nintendo 64 version anymore. It's horrible. It's so slow, and the frame rate is so bad, and like the hit detection. And that's really one of those nostalgia goggle things.
Okay, yeah. Here I was thinking that there was really no instances where it was like that, but you know, maybe it's like we were saying last week about how 16-bit games just age better. I can't say why that is. Maybe it's just because artistically it's as complete as it can be, and it's not trying to be something that it's not really succeeding at.
Maybe. I don't know. But then again, even this might be nostalgia goggles. You know what I mean?
Uh-oh.
Like okay. Well, because 16-bit was really the time when I understood games the most. Do you know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
The 8-bit era, I was just getting into them. They were toy, but like I was, by the time the 16-bit era came along, I was reading up on them, and it was the time that I had so much time to devote to them.
Right.
But, well, let's look at it this way. I still think Dragon Quest holds up, and a lot of people do. The Dragon Quest collection for Wii just sold 250,000 copies in 2 weeks. That's 1, 2, and 3, and then the Super Nintendo remakes of 1, 2, and 3.
Nice.
It's doing really well, and it's getting good reviews. But the thing is, I don't know. If I gave the first Dragon Quest to someone who never played it when it was originally out, you know, someone who's like maybe 12 years old now, for example, would they be able to even play it? Because, I mean, it's a game that required a lot of grinding, that had kind of weird menu systems. Like, when you're walking through town, if you want to search somewhere for an item, you have to stand over this square and hit the search button. Oh, you had to hit a different button to talk to someone, too.
It's
like, all that stuff's automatic now. Or like the first Final Fantasy game, how if you didn't assign your attack to the right person, your character would just go strike the air.
Awesome. Yeah, I guess gameplay is another dimension I didn't really think about.
But like when I listen to the opening tune of, like, you know, the first Dragon Quest game coming on the screen,
yeah,
instantly I'm like, I'm playing a wonderful game right now. But that is the nostalgia goggles.
Right.
Now I'm going to make the case for the Mario games, at least Mario 1 and Mario 3.
Sure.
Because I have introduced those to my nieces, and they're still like, these are good.
Well done, sir.
They never went, this looks old. Because they were just so well made, so well designed, that I would consider them almost timeless games. Mario, Super Mario World more so.
Sure.
Because, like, if you look at New Super Mario Brothers Wii, it's, you know, they do a couple neat graphical things, but it's really nothing that was leaps and bounds ahead of, you know, Super Mario World.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah.
Games like that are kind of all I wanted out of updates to games I've already played in some ways, because, like, well, no. Well, like, I played Smash Brothers, like, from the N64 version onwards, and they had those levels where you know, the single-player stuff. I think maybe that started with the GameCube one first, actually. And, you know, it was these 2.5D levels, you know, totally 3D, but you can only move in the typical platforming format. It's like, you know, if they made a game like this, I would play it. And that's what Super Mario Bros. Wii was.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, actually. Or even before that, some games like Yoshi's Island, things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which tried to do kind of the cel-shaded stuff early on.
Yes.
Those Man. Games, I think, hold up really well. Now, what do you think about GameCube games? I know GameCube's not that old right now, but even some of the early GameCube games look pretty bad now.
Some of them do, but one of my favorite games of all time, not just for the system, is Eternal Darkness.
Oh, that's such a good game.
Isn't it, though? Ah. And you know, I played through the first two times, because you can play through three times with a different aspect.
Yeah,
as the primary villain.
I've played through Blue Path and Green Path, but never Red Path.
Oh yeah, well, I don't blame you, because the Red Path's the strength path, and that's
yep.
very difficult to go up against. But I think I did blue, then red, then green, or maybe I did the same thing. I'm going to save red for last, but I didn't even know that at first. I just beat the game once and I was like, oh, that's it. But then I found out, oh, there's, you know, there's three idols. You can pick which one you want. And that changes the game. I'm like, oh, sweet. But, you know, graphically, the frame rate's really high, like higher than most GameCube games.
That's true.
And that's because the textures are maybe a little bit lower. There might not be as many polygons in the screen, but it doesn't look bad. You know, it doesn't look bad in the way like a 16-bit sprite doesn't look bad. It's colorful enough. It does everything it needs to do, and, you know, obviously it's not as good as like a Dragon Age or a Mass Effect.
Say that one of the ways to avoid the nostalgia goggles is to have a really good art style.
Yes, absolutely. Because if you're you know, trying to cover up your lack of technical ability with marketing, it's the marketing goes away eventually. The game is forever, which is something like Miyamoto said, like, a bad game is always a bad game, you know.
But a delayed game could be good, yeah, mm-hmm. something like that.
But this game was like one of the first ones available for the GameCube, and it stacks up.
Was it a launch title? If not, it was really soon after.
Yeah, it wasn't a launch title. It was within the first year. This was maybe 3 years ago, I want to say, that I finished the third path, and so it was pretty well into this, you know, current generation with the 360 and the Wii and PS3, and yeah, it does not look as good as, you know, the HD graphics on those systems. We excluded, of course, but it looks better than some Wii games I've played, to be honest.
It's better than most Wii games.
Oh yeah, because I had to do video capture for it even more recently than that.
There's Wii games that on the day they launched didn't hold up well to to memory.
No kidding. So yeah, I think
this game hasn't aged well. When did it come out? Yesterday.
I'm trying. Yeah, so okay, so I guess games can be susceptible to this, but maybe I just don't play them. I don't play the bad ones, naturally. I only play good games.
Well, that's true. But, like, I think anything that's a movie licensed title is going to age badly.
Right.
I mean, for one thing, one of the only reasons a lot of those games sell is because they were piggybacked onto a really popular movie franchise. Right. You know what I mean? I remember the Sylvester Stallone movie Cliffhanger. Do you recall that movie?
There was a game based on Cliffhanger?
There was, and I remember playing it just because I really liked Cliffhanger. But even at the time, I thought it was a bad game. But, like, play it now.
No.
Play it now, and it's a bad game that has gotten infinitely worse.
Oh, jeez, that's terrible.
But, like, some of these games, like, okay, Ninja Turtles. Ninja Turtles for the Nintendo.
Yeah.
It was so bad that they didn't even release that one in Japan. I have a cartridge right now in my collection, sure. You know, a Famicom cartridge that says Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I thought I was buying the first game, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's like the Konami game, you know, the arcade game, which came out in America as Turtles 2, the arcade game.
Right.
In Japan, Turtles 2 was what we called Turtles 3, the Manhattan Project, and blah. You know, Konami is just like, no, we didn't make that. That company Ultra made that. Don't you own Ultra? Shut up.
Yeah.
You know,
we didn't try to get around Nintendo's restrictive licensing policies. No.
No. It was another company. It was just not the great one. But anyway, despite this Turtles game being kind of, I don't know, not very great, I remember liking it a lot. And I and millions of other kids went out and bought it because it was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game. And, you know, this was right at the peak of Turtles. I think it was slightly before the movie, maybe just after the movie. But, you know, that era.
Sure.
And this game came out, and I remember the only real good character to play was Donatello because he had the reach. But anyway, I was playing this game, and, you know, it was a hard game, I remember, but I don't remember it being a bad game until I played it recently.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, that's why the game was hard, because it's bad. You know, it wasn't hard because I was weak sauce, although I was weak sauce. But
And
that was definitely one of the reasons. But, like, it's, you know, it's some, like, impossible jumps or you know, just things that were just bad game design choices. And it's ugly.
Yeah, isn't it?
Like, the Turtles 2 game was, you know, based off the arcade game, which was still one of my favorite arcade games. Yeah, it
doesn't look
ever
as good as the arcade game, but it's passable for sure.
Not at all, but it uses kind of a bright color palette, and it, you know, it's a reasonable port, you know?
Yeah.
Of the better game, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Simpsons, Bart versus the Space Mutants.
Oh, I played that recently, actually, because of the nostalgia. And I think that might be a bad game, too, because I was trying to remember all the little details and tricks on how to spray paint everything, and I couldn't do it. And it's like, why did I like this game so much? There's just so much I hate about what I'm doing right now.
it was clever at the time.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, because you had to do things like shoot rockets to paint things, you know, another color or whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, it was only really clever in the first stage. And once you got past that, it was just like, jump on people with hats, you know.
Yeah. Because the second stage, I don't remember a lot about it, except wasn't it like a factory and a conveyor belt or something? Yep.
Stuff like that. And it just got unreasonably hard. But I remember when it came out, I was so impressed by the graphics because it used voice samples, too.
Mm, yep.
It was like, don't have a cow, man.
Yep, I remember that.
And for some reason, the screen was totally blank during the point. Maybe the Nintendo couldn't handle doing a high-quality voice sample and graphics at the same time.
It's entirely possible.
I don't remember, but like, the play control is not good. It did have some interesting themes in it, but I was such a fan of The Simpsons. I just, nostalgia goggles, you know, now.
Yep.
I still, even though I'm pretty sure it's not a good game anymore, I would like to play it again, just because I do remember. You can make prank calls to Moe's in that game.
I forgot. Thanks for reminding me, because there's like phone booths everywhere.
You had to make a prank call so that one of the people wearing like a purple t-shirt would come out of the Moe's.
Oh, thank you, because I knew I was forgetting something. Okay.
There were just so many really interesting things in that game. Well, it was designed by Gary Kitchen.
Who is?
The guy who made Pitfall?
I never knew his name.
Okay. Kind of a famous Activision game programmer.
Well, I know Pitfall for sure.
Yeah, who went on to form later Absolute Software, which... Oh, here's an interesting bit. Absolute, Acclaim, Activision, Accolade.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed they're all, like, very high in the A's?
Yeah.
Okay. Because they all were formed because Activision left from Atari, okay? which is another word with A in it. But they all wanted, but on like financial reports and things like that, they all wanted to be listed above Atari. Activision was first, and then with each company that came out afterwards that were people breaking off from Atari, they'd always make their one so that it would be a higher, like alphabetically earlier than the other company. So Accolade is ACC, you know, because that would be ridiculous. Higher than Activision, you know. ACT. And Acclaim is also ACC. And then Absolute was the last one to be made, and that's Gary Kitchen's when he broke from Activision, and that's even higher up because it's AB.
That's ridiculous.
Isn't it? Yeah, that's crazy. And I think of those companies, only Activision still remains.
Yeah, well, Atari is still around too, sort of, a little bit.
Yeah.
In name only, kind of like AT&T. Another A. Oh. it is a good Simpsons game.
What's a good Simpsons game?
Bart's Nightmare for Super Nintendo. I mean, it's okay. Maybe good's too strong of a word.
No. You've got the nostalgia glasses on again.
I've played it recently. Like, you know, it was really inconsistent. All the levels looked a lot different from it. Like, there were different games almost with different, like, different art direction on each one. But it was really clever, I thought. Okay, granted, I didn't really play it myself. I was watching someone else play it.
It was clever, but some of the mini games were just ill thought of.
Yeah.
The same with Virtual Bart. Virtual Bart is maybe one of the most impressive, has the most impressive cutscenes of any Super Famicom game, because they were like full screen animated like clips. And there's one that's still disturbing to me now, because you're Bart Simpson and you're a pig in one of these games. And if you die in the slaughterhouse, they have a cutscene where they show Homer eating corn dogs, and he's like eating corn dogs. He's like, hum, 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 and he gets to a corn dog that looks like Bart's deep fried head. He looks at it and goes, ah! You know, the standard, I can't do it right now, the standard Homer scream.
Right.
Pauses for 1 second and goes, ow! And I'm like, oh my gosh, how did I get past the censorship policies of the time? You know what I mean? Because this is... I was just like, that's horrible. He just ate his son knowingly. Because it was a corn dog. But that looked really impressive at the time, and because of things like that, I was able to overlook some of the gameplay design flaws. But like, some of these games are almost unplayable these days. I haven't played Bart's Nightmare recently, but I remember that game where you're like in a cell or something, or like you're like in someone's bloodstream or something.
Yeah.
And you have to occasionally collect Radioactive Man or Mr. Adam or something. But I remember the controls being like so unwieldy.
Yeah, definitely.
But you see, you're proving the point perfectly, though, that we do these games that we liked, we are holding to a higher standard.
Why? Okay. Maybe I can find one that passes the test.
Okay.
Willow for NES. Now you're laughing at me.
It was a pretty good game. Did you know... Willow's the first time I ever heard someone write a fanfic.
I was in
fifth grade, maybe, and like we were doing a creative writing class, and someone had written a story about Willow and like these golden acorns and stuff, and I'm thinking. And it was weird enough that, because I hadn't played the Willow game at that point, but I'd seen the movie,
right?
And I'm like this has nothing to do with the movie. At the time, even then, I was like, you are totally copying a movie. That's not really creative writing. But anyway, I'm reading it, and I'm like, this isn't the plot of the movie. And I'm like, okay, what is this? Because like, his fanfic involved collecting things. And I'm like, this is a very bad story point. And I'm like, it sounds like you based this off a video game. And I talked to him, and I'm like, you know, the story you wrote that's based off a video game, isn't it? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, why didn't you base it off the movie? And he's like, there's a movie.
I think the game might actually be better. Because this is one of those instances where the movie, you know, is pretty low budget and left a lot to be desired, which is part of the reason you write fanfic, is because, like, there's something you love, but there's so much technically wrong with it that it's like, I can improve upon this. I know what I'm doing.
Wasn't Willow one of the first Ron Howard movies?
Did Ron Howard do that one? I'm not even sure.
It's either him or someone else who I was, like, surprised when I heard it.
Interesting. Okay. No, I have no idea, but it was the first time I ever saw, you know, Warwick Davis, in, like, not in an Ewok suit or something.
Hmm.
So that was pretty cool. Billy Barty, who I knew of from Masters of the Universe as Gwildor, again, not in makeup. Not in too much makeup.
All right, there's a movie that hasn't aged well.
Masters of the Universe.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Rather than talk about that, I'm going to point everyone to the Powetcast commentary track that we did about it. We being me, Zach, Adam. Was Crazy there? I don't recall who the entire cast was. Yes, Crazy was there. We do this kind of half like riff tracks, just half sort of history about the movie. So we make fun of some of the really bad effects and the ridiculous dialogue, and like Dolph Lundgren has almost no lines in that movie. He just poses a lot with his man nipples. It definitely I still love it to death, though, because it had a lot of heart to it. Even though it was trying to be Star Wars, there's just a lot to love there. There really is. And I got so I went to Japan for the first time. We were at the Ryokan, and I like popped it into my DVD. Like I brought like some DVDs with like Logan's Run, Masters of the Universe, and I don't remember what else. But those are the two I remember watching while I was there. And like, you know, we're in the common room and we're maybe a little inebriated, and I pop this thing in. I'm like, this is the greatest movie ever. And like, we're watching it and like, you know, Galleon's there. And he's like, and like this girl we met from Texas was there, and she's like, can we do something else? I'm like, okay.
Yeah. And things like that are going to continue to happen. But I guess that raises another question in just that. Does it matter?
No, like, of course not.
Because if it's something you still enjoy doing, even though your brain's telling you this is a bad game, but your heart's telling you, but
yeah,
you know, if it brings you back to a special place where you were at the time, I guess it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it's really all about your enjoyment and how you feel about it, really.
And I think that's where the sadness comes in. When you really love something, but you try to show it to someone else and they're like, oh no.
Okay.
No.
I won't name names, but I just had that experience talking to some of the 4CR guys, and I was really, you know, hyping up the BioWare games, you know, Mass Effect in particular. Yep. And this person who shall remain unnamed but possibly listens to the podcast played it, returned it, got Red Dead Redemption instead, loved the hell out of it. So I don't know, what are you gonna do? Mass Effect has a lot of technical issues, but I think it was more than just the gameplay wasn't fun, unless I'm mistaken. He can tell me.
I still remember when I was at the video store. No, video game store. Sorry, this is a ways back, and a mother was looking for a video game for her son for Christmas.
Right.
And she was looking at a lot of these movie licensed titles and stuff like that. And she's like, excuse me, do you work here? Was first. I get that a lot, actually. But
yeah.
I'm like, no, I don't. And she's like, oh, do you know anything about video games? And I'm like, a little bit. And she's like, I'm looking for a game for my son. He likes action games. And I said, well, what system does he have? She's like, he's got a PlayStation. And she was holding up, I don't know, these fairly bad movie license games. And I'm like, well, over there, and it's really cheap right now, it's like $15, there's Metal Slug. Metal Slug X, actually.
Oh, dear.
For the PlayStation. And I said, that's a really good game. And she looked at it, and she's like, it's not even 3D. And I thought to myself, hey, lady who doesn't know anything about video games, this is a really good game, whereas the entirety of the stack you're holding are bad.
Yeah.
But then I was thinking, like, you know, if I dissuade her, probably she's going to go home and give it to her 10-year-old kid, and he's going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
And maybe never even play it, you know. What? This is, you know, because that's...
You use your hands? It's like a baby's toy.
It's like a baby's toy. But the thing is, I don't know. I'm wondering, people, you know, I've noticed recently, though, that a lot of kind of, I'll say kids, in anybody under the age of 20 is a kid to me. Sorry,
damn kids.
Sorry for all of you kids who are listening to this, who are right now going, I'm an adult. My driver's license says so. But but no, you are adults. Don't. But anyway, when people who are, yeah, maybe just getting their driver's license, that type of age, I wonder how retro games seem to them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, because there's some people who watch our show or listen to our podcast to learn about retro games because they didn't grow up with it.
I know, and I wonder, like, when those of this is kind of a direct question to those of you who are, you know, maybe 20 or younger right now. When you play these games, are you seeing them as like kind of like how one would look at like pop art or something, you know, is kind of like being a relic of the past and being interesting to you because they're, you know, so kitschy, you know, or are you actually discovering lost gems of classics? I mean, you didn't play No More Heroes 2, did you? But you know, no. Of it, right?
Of course.
The job games in there have been like retro made like 8-bit games.
Yeah, yeah.
They replaced the 3D games and stuff with these 8-bit retro games to be the jobs. Yeah. And like a lot of the fun of that is seeing them kind of like lampoon the conventions of games at that time, you know?
Yeah.
And so a lot of people really, really loved that for like that reason. But like, I wonder what percentage of it is, like, if I had an 8-track player right now, I'd think that would be pretty cool. Because yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, but like, I love Laserdiscs. I love Laserdiscs. I collect Laserdiscs, you know?
Yeah.
Despite there being really no advantage these days. Okay, Laserdisc writers are writing in right now going, the video quality is slightly better because it's from an analog format, blah, 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 blah. But they're really big.
Slightly better than what exactly? VHS, probably.
My eyes aren't good enough to tell much of a difference. But it would be hard to say that the quality is better than a Blu-ray, though. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, that's definitely true.
But yet I collect them just because I like the idea.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's what retro gaming is doing. I don't know.
Well, you know, it could be like how I feel about 70s music. You know, like, you know, if you only ever hear disco and the pop stuff, then it's like, oh, 70s sucked. But like, you know, if you start to get into some real awesomeness in here, I'm going to have some disagreements, I'm sure, with people. Styx, yes. God.
Styx are awesome.
Yeah. You know, the Cars, you know, the early Cars.
Yeah.
That's timeless to me. Okay, so some of Styx maybe not. Anything with Dennis DeYoung can probably do without.
So in that way, it's not nostalgia glasses because you weren't there in the 70s.
Well, that's what I mean. I'm imagining what it must be like for someone playing a retro game. If the game is objectively good, if it has shortcomings, and I'm sure that they will, they'll overlook them for the same reasons or similar reasons to why I might have loved them in the first place.
Have you ever seen The Golden Voyage of Sinbad?
If you don't like mean Jason the comedian, no.
Or like Jason and the Argonauts?
No.
Oh, you should see some of these movies, because whereas the special effects look fairly primitive today, I mean, it was really impressive at the time, but the movies are good enough that, like, you can overlook that.
Sure. Oh no, I'm more of like the skeleton fighting in Jason and the Argonauts. I think it looks pretty cheesy, but that wouldn't make it a bad movie, I don't think, right? Yeah,
I don't think so. But I guess that also depends on what your criteria for being a bad movie, a bad game, or something like that is.
Right.
I don't know. Because what's interesting about games, and I mean, you'll find fans of every single movie, even the ones that are really, really bad. I'm sure there's like a Giggly fan or something right now. That bad...
A Giggly fan?
Giggly? Not Giggly. Whatever, that one that was like Jennifer Lopez and...
Oh, Geely.
Geely, that's it?
Yeah.
Gosh, I didn't care enough to even learn Giggly. How to pronounce it.
It's like someone who's such a fan, they giggle? I didn't know what you were trying to say.
Oh, you're right. Oh my gosh, that would be a totally wrong pronunciation. Anyway, I'm sure there's a fan of that movie somewhere. Maybe on the production staff. But anyway, or who thinks that the mainstream media, lamestream media, misinterpreted.
Don't even start.
But, I mean, for the most part, people kind of have come to a conclusion of what's a good movie and what's a bad movie.
Right.
As time goes on. But I think when it comes to video games, there's a little more debate. Like, I heard from some people, okay, this is going back to the 4CR thread again, sorry. Who were saying that most of the Zelda games before Link to the Past didn't age well. And I was thinking, I disagree with that. I don't know. And they said that up till Super Mario 3, none of the Mario games aged well.
Okay, no.
Remember this, right?
Oh, I was in on that conversation. But I've been playing Zelda and Zelda 2 a lot lately, which, you know, we mentioned when Phil Baum was on the program.
Yes.
The program. It's like a 60 Minutes or something.
Ooh.
Yeah. And, you know, you play the original Zelda, and it's so easy. Like, if you know the tricks, like half of that game is just talking to people. Yeah, there's dialogue and people in Zelda 1, and learning the tricks of how to defeat the different enemies. Like, at the Dodongo, you know, just, you know, if you know it takes bombs, you just, like, make sure you have enough by the time you get there. And, like, he's so tiny compared to other bosses in that game. 3 bombs does it, you're done, you get the thing. Or the thing that's also a D, when you use the whistle on, like one whistle blast, and it just gets smaller. There's an enemy with like 4 like plant heads, and one well-placed bomb can destroy it in one hit. Stuff like that. It's like some of that game is just so easy. The hardest part is finding the different dungeons, because it's not incredibly obvious, and like the last 3 are all hidden. You have to use the warp whistle, you have to burn a bush, and you have to use a bomb.
At the time, though, it was the most complicated game for a home console ever released.
Absolutely. But, you know, you compare it to a modern Zelda game, and it's like they hold your hand. They show you where the next level is. You know, if you can't get to the water temple, that's your own damn fault. At least there's the internet. You know, this you know, back then you had a hint line and a map that came with it. Like, you know, we're not used to having secondary media with our games to tell us how to play them, because, you know, they get lost. And so for as much as designers decry the secondhand market, I really feel like, you know, them putting tutorials and you know, maps and stuff into games themselves, into the software, is sort of, you know, with the recognition that the legitimate owner, let alone like a secondhand one, might not have these materials laying around always. And, you know, that helps really good for its resellability in the future when you want to do it like on a virtual console type setting. Because, you know, I don't think Zelda has the maps with it when you download it for Wii Virtual Console, right? Or the 3DS, no. 3DS where?
It has a virtual manual, but it's hard to switch between those two things.
So. Yeah, well, I mean, the map wasn't in the manual proper.
No, it wasn't, no.
So it was packaged with the game. But, yeah, so you know, you had to, like, take these things into context and, like, see the entire scope of it before you realize, you know, whether or not a game was designed well because it was meant to be played with this map in mind.
That brings up a bunch of nostalgia. I remember pack-ins with games, especially computer games. For like copy protection, they had those like wheels and stuff.
Yep.
Oh man, that stuff was great.
Legion Suit Larry.
the age test. Yeah.
Yeah, you actually had to, like, you know stuff about history. Who's Spiro Agnew? I have no idea.
But I learned from that game. But right. Yeah, I sometimes feel I learned more from Leisure Suit Larry than I did from the public education system.
Yeah, right.
No. It's but it's on.
I learned more about life and love. Okay, so all right, so games are susceptible to nostalgia goggles, just like movies and other forms of entertainment media. I'm sure comics will fall into that as well. Just think.
Do they? But like, has comic style changed? Jump on me for this.
Oh,
but
hell's yeah! I don't want to get too much detail because this isn't. I'm sure people are interested in comics.
So, like, a person who reads Superman today would have a hard time jumping into 1970s Superman,
for example. Okay, no, but the dialogue has improved, assuming there is dialogue. Like, one thing you can say about modern comics is that there's lots of huge splash pages, not a lot of panels, and so you can get through it really quickly. And for as much as it costs, that's kind of ridiculous. The whole New 52 thing is indicative of that, and we did something for the PowerCast. I'm going to plug more PowerCast stuff about that. So it would have been almost 2 weeks ago by this point, the time this episode comes out, about just how fast of a read some of those things are, and the storytelling is kind of lax. Some of the older comics are good because it's just more dense with text, and it takes you longer to get through it, and but the style might turn you off. The writing style might turn you off. The art style might turn you off as well. The paper doesn't hold up as well because it was like on newsprint before, and now it's like on glossy print. So different. Like the color depth is way better. Like it's really changed. So graphically, like movies or video games, there is just a lot more dynamic stuff they can do. And the comic book reading audience has sort of, is matured the right word? They're just different expectations of what's
comic book reading audience.
Yeah, I know
mature.
How much of an oxymoron it sounds like.
Then again, we weekly record a weekly. You can say that weakly or week. We weekly record a podcast about what. The family computer, which was essentially toys. So
yeah,
I guess I cannot criticize comic book fans. So at least there's reading involved there.
Is there anything that we can say to, I don't know, what's the final thoughts on this? Because we find out that it's susceptible and that there are ways around it. There are people who didn't grow up with this stuff who still find value in it. So, I mean, what does that mean? I guess it's
really hard because I don't know if one can actually be objective when it comes to rating like older games, because technology has changed so much in such a short time. I mean, in my lifetime, it's gone from Pac-Man being high tech.
Yeah,
it was at the time. Because it was high resolution raster. Stuff like that.
Yep.
Things like Uncharted 3, just in the course of my lifetime.
Yeah, video games more than any other medium I can think of has had that. Books are stagnant with text and sometimes some pictures. Although, maybe that's changing with ebooks a little bit, but that's not necessarily what they're for. It's text is text.
Yeah.
What would come next? Probably movies next, movies and TV. Yeah.
And comics, I mean, you can TV doesn't age well.
Yeah.
Movies okay, but I've been recently on a Night Court kick.
I'm sorry.
No, there's Harry Anderson and John Larroquette are still hilarious. But like the way it's filmed just looks so cheap now.
Mm-hmm.
The film stock itself, I don't remember, because when I watched it as a kid, I thought, this is television. This is how real life looks.
Right.
But now I'm like, real life looks like what's on television now. Real life doesn't look like this washed out, weird colored. But then again, nostalgia.
Yep.
Because when I play those scenes back in my mind, they from when I watched it when I was a kid, when it was my favorite television show. Yeah, I was a weird kid. The Night Court was my favorite television. Anyway, well, that's for another podcast. But
no kidding.
But I look back on that, and you know, you remember what you think it was. But look at the whole history of film.
Yeah.
Like, what is it? It's got to be at like 120, 130 years of film now,
mm-hmm.
or something.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on where you count the beginning of it. But let's say 110 years of modern film. Okay?
Okay.
It's changed, yes. But, like, it's still photographic, photorealistic photos of people. You know what I mean?
For the most part, when it's not animated or 3D or whatever.
You know, it's changed to, like, what are the innovations? Color, of course. Widescreen.
3D, which is actually a pretty early innovation.
Yeah,
believe it or not,
but I mean the standard frame rate's still the same.
Yeah,
the film stock has gotten better, but like I'd say that video games have changed more dramatically. You know, every 10 years, video games change more dramatically than film has changed.
Oh yeah, I think definitely video games are the fastest changing medium that we have, entertainment medium.
I mean, that's not to take anything away from film. I absolutely love film, but I mean, the type of cuts and things like that, there hasn't been a lot added in the last 50 years, you know?
Yep.
I mean, people have definitely written better stories and used more artistic direction and things like that, but, like, say a movie like the original War of the Worlds and compared to the new War of the Worlds.
Oh, yeah.
One of them definitely looks a lot better, but which one is the better film?
The first one.
That would be my opinion. Although, people who were, you know, 10 years old when the remake came out and watched it, maybe it was one of the first movies they saw in the theater, they will always remember that as being a superior film, probably.
Well, that's an example of a movie that I have no nostalgia for because obviously it was before my time and I didn't really see it as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I like the newer one because it follows the book more closely.
Yeah.
At least like in the design of the ships and what it did exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the acting's better. But there's just something about those summer blockbusters that just kind of turns me off, and there's just so much action. I mean, you know, by comparison, the earlier film was a lot more plotting, probably because they couldn't do all the awesome effects that they would have wanted to at the time. But there's just something, you know, when you can't rely on the crutch of special effects, you try to do other things, mm-hmm. and those other things can. Like 8-bit games, 16-bit games,
yeah.
You know, early 3D games. You know, that's something that they do, if they do it right, can make it timeless no matter what it looks like. And maybe War of the Worlds isn't a good example of that. Day of the Earth Stood Still could be another one. The newer movie has no substance to it whatsoever, in my opinion.
Nothing.
I mean, it had an interesting idea, but wasn't able to follow it through very well. And I mean, come on, making Keanu Reeves play an alien that doesn't understand human emotion, that's just a gimme. I'm kidding.
Typecasting.
I know. But like actually like Keanu Reeves and Tom Cruise quite a bit as actors, so
oh, yeah.
You know, what do I know? But the original movie, despite that they couldn't show nearly what they showed in the newer one, just said more. The message of that mm-hmm. original story came through more clearly in the original movie. Whereas I don't think that the latter one had a message. It was just like, I came to Earth to warn you to not be dicks. Oh, you're being dicks. Okay, never mind. I'm gone.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, I think that's enough for this week then.
I think so too. Can I put in one last thing about Final Fantasy?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
I think this
summarizes the whole thing for me.
Okay.
I didn't play Final Fantasy VII until a few years ago.
Okay,
but
wow.
I'd been because as we said in the last podcast, I was a Nintendo guy for a long time.
Yep.
But I'd played Final Fantasy IV and two in America, yeah, 2 and 3, and I thought those games had such amazing stories, just wonderful stories and really good characters. Then again, that might be in the nostalgia glasses too. But I played Final Fantasy VII, and I was playing it in a time where it's not a perfect 10 graphically, which is what it got when it came out.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
It I couldn't look at it as being a super pretty game at that point, so I had to play it on its merits as a game alone, and I found that the story was not very tight. Mm-hmm. There were typos in it. That you know that the gameplay was a bit convoluted. Now, because I have no nostalgia for it whatsoever, I saw it as maybe a lesser game.
Sure.
Whereas someone who's never played Final Fantasy II or III would probably consider those far lesser games. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Final Fantasy VII is renowned for its music, but I will always think that the music from Final Fantasy II is much better.
Two or four?
American two. American
yeah,
two.
It,
Japanese, it Japanese four.
Kefka's theme is awesome.
And the opera scene in...
Wait, that was six. Three.
That was six. Yes. Damn it. But you're going to jump to six right now. The opera scene in six is probably one of the best sequences in video game history. As far as having a huge impact for me.
Nostalgia goggles could be talking again.
I think so too. And that's the question we have for you. What games have people told you are amazing that you've played and been disappointed with, or what games have you been trying so hard to make people see in the way that your rose-tinted nostalgia goggles had seen them in the past? And let's get a little discussion going on that.
Yep. So you can, if you're listening to the podcast on Famicom.tv or Powit.tv, just leave a message in the comments. Or if you're on Facebook, that works too, Famicom Dojo. Twitter, also Famicom Dojo. And, you know, we haven't done this in a while, so I want to do it now.
Okay.
We haven't plugged the DVD for quite a bit.
Oh, that's true.
And you know, the reason is we feel like it should speak for itself. You should come to the site, watch the videos. I know we don't update them as much as we do the podcast. But we do have like the Sega Scope 3D special out, the Famicom 3D system special as well. Right before that, and we're going to get some new stuff out before the end of the year. We're hoping
two. We're going to get two videos out.
Okay, I'm going to say one. I'm going to say one. We're going to aim for two, but I'm going to say one for sure.
Okay.
But you know the reason we plug the DVD and give all your wonderful listeners a discount is, you know, you come back week after week and we can't do the show without your support. The support that we need to keep things running and keep the lights on is for you to buy this awesome DVD. And if you have it already, buy it for a friend or encourage them to buy it. And that's where we're going to keep even the discount code, which I won't say out loud because it might go away. We'll just leave it in the show notes. So I think if you like this show, that is the best way to show us how. Other than that, any parting words for this podcast?
If you do own a copy of the DVD already, can you rate it on Amazon.com? Unless you didn't like it, in which case, please keep that to yourself.
Right.
But well I think done, that sir. Would that would really help us. And if you like our podcast as well, go to iTunes and give us a rating. And again, if you don't like it, just send me an angry email telling me about it. But please don't take our score down. because you may not like it right now, but when you listen to it in 3 years, you may go, I remember when I didn't like that, and now I'm all nostalgic about it.
We should set up maybe some kind of system because, you know, we've been talking about doing some kind of promotion or a contest for some of the cool swag that we got from Tokyo Game Show.
Maybe? Autographed copy of Captain Rainbow. Mm-hmm. We've got autographed copy of Boundish. We've got some T-shirts. I think we got all kinds of stuff. So
lots of awesomeness. So we'll think about that. Sit on that one for a little bit and come back with something. And you know maybe. Help encourage people to tell their friends about this awesome show.
Indeed.
So
well, I mean, that's all I've got for now. You know, I was listening to our first couple podcasts.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that they were amazing, but that was the nostalgia goggles.
All right, I'm taking them out of the feed. No one can listen to them again.
In fact, I'm thinking of the beginning of this episode of the podcast, and those first couple minutes, those were awesome.
Not
then,
nearly
then we sold out halfway through.
All right, until next week, everyone.